Here's the problem, though. Longer lifespan means you need more money. And that's the thing that, you know, we really counsel people of all ages. Keep stashing away the money right now while you're working. Now's the time to do it. If you're in your, I don't care, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, even 70, you know, more and more people are working till about age 70 or so. Doesn't matter. If you're still working, please be salting away the money.
Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson, an Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement, how they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. And we'll also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors' health care.
Hi, it's Ann Nelson, your host for today's show. Longevity. It's a word we keep hearing all the time now. It's a fact. We're all living longer. And that also means we need more money saved up for our retirement. It's getting harder to qualify for the age pension here in Australia and in other countries that have social security. Does it also mean that we'll be able to survive on that pension? I think not. We may only be able to afford a very modest lifestyle. It may suit some, probably not the majority. Today, my guest, Kate Stolter from Better Money Decisions. Kate is a licensed investment advisor and is an author. Kate will share her insights into longevity risk, financial planning, things to look out for that eat away at our investments, and encouraging women to take more interest in their investments. So I'd like to welcome to the show Kate Stolter. How are you going, Kate?
I'm doing really well, Anne. Thank you so much for inviting me on your show. Really excited to be here.
So you're in Albuquerque, is that correct? And can you tell us a bit about your background? You are a licensed investment advisor and the founder of Better Money Decisions, but I believe you've got your fingers in a few pies being an author and a podcaster.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, I have a book called Don't Let Your Money Kick the Bucket Before You Do, which is about longevity and being prepared to have the money to live a long life so you don't outlive your money. Then I am relaunching a show called Better Money Decisions, the same as the firm. I'm going to be relaunching that in December 2017. And I also write for a couple publications, their websites, U.S. News and World Report, for Forbes. I did financial writing for Investors Business Daily and taught their investing classes for many, many years. So I've been around the financial services world in many capacities for quite a long time now.
Very impressive. So you would have a lot of contacts and be up with the latest trends as far as investing and portfolio returns.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's really crucial to be looking at the science of investing. You know, we work with a company called Dimensional Fund Advisors, and they have quite a presence in Australia, actually. They have an office down there. They're really growing. And that's a company that specializes in low-cost investments, asset allocation. So it's interesting because that's something, obviously, the laws are different, the regulations different when you're talking to different countries. But one thing that the U.S. and Australia do have in common is a very large presence of this company called Dimensional Fund Advisors.
Dimensional Fund Advisors. That's a really interesting name.
Yeah, they specialize. And just to be clear, they're a vendor of ours. You know, we use some of their funds because we like them. We don't work for them or anything. But they're based on Nobel Prize winning science. There's a gentleman named Eugene Fama who did a great deal of research for the last 50 years, really. He started in about 1960, actually, so almost 60 years now at this point. And he did a lot of research into stock prices and how investments perform. And a lot of that research is now incorporated into the philosophy at Dimensional Fund. So yeah, I just wanted to mention that because they do have quite a large presence in Australia for your listeners there.
Oh, right. Thank you. And I believe you're saying that with our investments that we lose money through just being in the wrong types of funds through fees, expenses. And can you explain that further, please?
Sure, absolutely. And this is true throughout the developed world. There are a lot of mutual fund companies where you have a person who's sitting there, or usually it's a team, or they use some what they call quantitative models, that kind of thing. They have people who are choosing what they think are going to be stocks and bonds that they think are going to beat the market. The problem is, though, Anne, that often it doesn't work. You know, it works till it doesn't. Most of these actively managed mutual funds where you have a person or a team who's looking for an investment that's going to outperform, most of the time they cannot consistently beat their benchmark over any kind of 15-year period. There's a lot of research to show that. So what they also do that hurts investors is they charge a high fee. Now, if you think about it, it intuitively makes a lot of sense. If you invest in, say, a mutual fund or an exchange-traded fund that is just simply tracking an index, for example, the big U.S. index, the S&P 500, or maybe an index of the biggest Australian stocks, you know, it doesn't matter. If you're just simply tracking an index, you know, your common sense tells you that's going to be a lot cheaper than paying a team of managers who are going in there trying to beat the market. So these actively managed mutual funds, those high fees, they do chip away at your return and are, generally speaking, in the opinion of our firm, not a good way to invest for numerous reasons, including that one.
Right. Well, that's good to know. Mm-hmm. So what are the alternatives?
Well, you know, there's a thing called passive investing, and there's several different definitions of that. The most traditional version of passive investing is simply just tracking an index, like I just mentioned. Like, say you might have, you know, there's an exchange-traded fund whose ticker in the U.S. is SPY, SPY, and that one just tracks the index of big U.S. stocks, the S&P 500, the Standard & Poor's 500. And there are similar ones that just track, say, an Australian index or a British index or an index of global stocks. And it's very, very cheap because, again, you have nobody in there picking investments. All the fund does is just buys what's in that index, holds it at asset allocation weighted to the amount that the stock is in the index. And that's all they do. Super cheap. You're going to have market performance when you invest that way. And that's what you do. The other definition of passive, and this is the one that Eugene Fama uses, he was the consultant to Dimensional Funds. I mentioned him a minute ago. His idea of passive is simply not trying to pick stocks. So Dimensional kind of does their passive funds a little bit differently. They might have, say, they might track what's called the Russell 3000. So that's 3000 of the biggest U.S. stocks. And by the way, Dimensional has stock funds all around the world representing all regions. I'm just kind of using these U.S. funds as an example, just for point of illustration. But what Dimensional will do is say they'll have something that maybe kind of tracks the 3000 biggest U.S. stocks. But say something like a few years ago, you know, Warren Buffett bought the Heinz company, and that meant that it was no longer publicly traded. Everybody had to run in there then on the index funds, and they all had to sell that Heinz stock that day. They were all running in there to make the same moves at the same time. Dimensional can wait. They don't have to join the frenzy to either buy or sell. So that means that they get a little better price for their fund investors. And then they can go in there and substitute a similar company if they want to. So again, that's not stock picking. It's just saying, you know, say we can't get Ford Motor, I'm just making this up, say we can't get Ford Motor at a good price today, maybe it makes much more sense to go in and substitute some General Motors shares. And again, I'm making that up because I don't know the fundamentals of either one of those right now. But that's the kind of thing, is they do have a little bit of the latitude to substitute something similar if they can't get the best price on the originally intended investment. So that is not stock picking. It's really, again, focusing on the overall allocation for an investor. And that's where Dimensional is so good. But those are kind of two examples there of what passive investing would mean. And I think in either one of those cases, Anne, you could really see how that would lower an investor's cost over paying a team to pick stocks for them.
Right. Well, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm, does.
We're all living a lot longer. We hear about longevity risk more and more all the time now. So it's different now, isn't it? Investing now for our retirement is different from, say, our parents' or our grandparents' days.
Oh, it certainly is, you know. And again, I don't have the numbers for Australia, but I do know in the United States that more and more people are living to age 100. And then you can extrapolate from there and you can see that more and more people are living into their 90s. And, you know, a lot of these numbers, they tend to be true across all the developed world because, you know, we have access to similar pharmaceuticals, similar safety measures. I mean, you know, and there's some very common sense reasons for this, Anne. I mean, cars are built better and safer than they were a generation or two ago, aren't they?
Yes. And they've gone down in price comparative to our wages, I suppose, as well.
That's true, too. That's very true. You know, I mean, we all wear seat belts, you know, in many countries in the developed world. I mean, certainly the United States, fewer and fewer people are smoking, you know, so there are a lot of reasons why our health is better. We just have, you know, the surgeries, medical science has gotten better. So people are living a lot longer today than they did in our grandparents' generation. Now, on the one hand, you could say, hey, that's great. A lot of people really welcome that news. Here's the problem, though. Longer lifespan means you need more money. And that's the thing that, you know, we really counsel people of all ages. Keep stashing away the money right now while you're working. Now's the time to do it. If you're in your, I don't care, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, even 70, you know, more and more people are working till about age 70 or so. Doesn't matter. If you're still working, please be salting away the money because, you know, in so much as sure, you know, here in the US, we have Social Security. I know that other governments have some safety nets for senior citizens. But nonetheless, it doesn't mean that's going to cover everything. Most people these days do not want to be a burden on their children or grandchildren. So it's really imperative that people plan for a longer lifespan. And that means that includes saving more money.
Yeah. It's very important. And it's getting more and more important. I know. Just personally, my mum's 88 and I have an aunt that's 91. Mm-hmm. So it's in my family genes as well to have a long life. I know our government is making it harder and harder to qualify for our age pension if you have your own income or too many assets. It's getting harder to qualify for the age pension. So they're making it that it will decrease what they give you, the more that you earn from other income.
Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that brings up a dilemma in and of itself, doesn't it? You know, and I'm sure a lot of people are struggling with that. At what point do I save my money? At what point am I penalized for being a good saver? You know, it's very difficult. And again, in the US, we don't have that yet. There's been talk of means testing Social Security, of means testing some of these safety nets. It has not happened yet. It's politically pretty unpopular right now in the US. I mean, look, over time, will that change? Of course. Governments can't be as generous as they once were. I think that's, again, that's true around the world. So everybody has some version or other that they're struggling with on this topic. You know, Anne, one other thing I wanted to add, when you talked about your mom and your aunt, I believe, being the ages that they are at right now, most of the people, 80% of the people living to 100 are women. And most of the people in their 90s are women. So I'm really fond of saying retirement is a woman's issue. And women need to really step up be involved with the money management. If you're married or you have a male partner, you know, married to a man or have a male partner, you want to be sure that you don't just let him manage all the money and you step away and don't act interested because he knows what he's doing. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. We've seen in most cases, actually, wives tend to think their husbands know what they're doing with the money, but they don't necessarily. That's just what we see most often. And, you know, I would say the same thing for same-sex couples, too. Because, you know, unless that meteor hits the two of you at the same time, one of you will die sooner. So I think if you're in a couple, it is imperative that both partners take an active role in understanding the couple's finances. Where are all your accounts? How much is there? How much are you saving? And so forth. These questions are important for every adult to understand.
Thank you. Well, that's very good advice. I'm actually a widow myself, so I know that the males don't live as long as the females. So why do so many people misunderstand about financial planning?
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't believe that it's necessary, or they don't really understand that this can be your roadmap into how your financial future is going to look. Hey, look, you know, we know things change. Things change. I mean, as you just said, people lose their spouses, sadly, and there are things that take you by surprise, but there's also good things that take you by surprise. You know, maybe you get a great job. Maybe you start a new career. Maybe you're able to sell a house for more than you thought you could. I mean, all kinds of things happen. Life changes. That's one thing. You know, my dad always told me this, and he was right. One constant is change. Things change. That's just inevitable. And a plan is not something written in stone. You know, back in the 80s, Anne, and the 90s, a lot of the financial planners, they would create sort of a book of charts and graphs, and they would put it into a leather-bound book. They would emboss your name on there. Well, that's ridiculous. Because, you know, in 3 months from now, it's very likely that something has changed, at least 6 months or a year, maybe not 3 months, but, you know, 6 months or a year from now, something significant probably has changed. You know, maybe you did a plan, and the plan showed, well, if you retire in 2 years, here's what will happen. Here's the money you will need. Well, in 6 months, you're like, oh, hey, you know what? I got a raise at work. My boss I can't stand left and was replaced by a great person. I think I can hang in there another 2 years now. Or maybe you're like, hey, you know what? I'm done. Can't take another second of this. I have to retire at the end of this year. So all of these things and just so many more things. So, I mean, life happens. So a financial plan is not something written in stone. I kind of hate the word plan for that reason. It's kind of more like just a guidepost, or really just, you know, we call it financial wellness for life. And I like thinking about it that way better than a plan, because but when you say financial wellness for life, that implies something that's living, that's breathing, that's changing, that grows with you in your life. So that's really how to think about the process of doing a deep dive into preparing for your financial future. So it's not a budget, by the way. What we tend to look at is, you can incorporate a budget into it, but it's a whole lot more than that. You know, we take a look at tax consequences of certain moves. We take a look at potential investment performance. We look at insurance. We look at, you know, house payments. What might happen if you pay off your house, if you continue paying the mortgage, if you sell your house, if you're going to start a business. I mean, all your different cash flow, inflow, outflow, as well as insurance. We'll look at your business. So really, it's a very, very comprehensive look at one's financial life. And I can't think of a soul, really, who wouldn't benefit from that.
And that's something that we need to hone in on, I suppose, that as we need a plan, or like you said, it's hard calling it a budget, mm-hmm. but we need some security going mm-hmm. forward.
Yeah.
Because I like the title of your book, Don't Let Your Money Kick the Bucket Before You Do. My aunt, I was telling you about, she ran out of money at 90, so now she's relying just on the pension. And I don't know about how big your pension is over there, but you can only live a very modest lifestyle on the age pension here in Australia.
Yeah, that's right. We have a program here is called Social Security. And it is based on the amount you paid into it when you were working. And it is capped. It is capped. So even a person, you know, to pick somebody like Oprah Winfrey or somebody that has made a lot of money, there's only so much she is going to get in Social Security. By the way, everybody has to take Social Security. So Oprah Winfrey will be taking it at some point. But it's based on, and it's kind of, it's tilted towards the lower end of your earnings and towards lower earners. So higher earners don't necessarily just keep growing, but you're right. It only enables a modest lifestyle. And I want to apologize. They're actually doing leaf blowing right outside my house right now. So I keep muting the microphone when you're talking. So hopefully that won't interfere too much. But yeah, that is, I can definitely sympathize and I can see the issue that your aunt is having. Well, let me ask you this, because I'm curious about this now. Does your aunt get help from other family members at this point? How is she getting by?
Yes, if she wants to go on any trips to visit the family, they always pay for her to come for her to visit. But yep. Things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you can't get up too much.
Right. No, it definitely limits your life. And, you know, you can make the argument. You can say, well, when you're in your 90s, you're probably not traveling a lot. But you know what goes up in your 90s? Healthcare. Now, granted, that's a particular issue in the United States, as opposed to other countries, I think, where the government does foot more of the bill for healthcare. You know, but nonetheless, it's still, I think the point remains, at any age, even if your healthcare is covered, you know, it's unfortunate that you have to turn to relatives if you want to take a trip at some point. I'm sure she doesn't like having to do that, you know?
I'm sure she doesn't, yeah. But them's the facts.
Yep.
And you can't go back to work when you're 90, that's for sure.
Yes, which is, again, great point. I'm glad you said that, because that's the point about doing as much as you can and jumping on this planning process as early as possible. You know, for most people, you don't really necessarily have the assets until you're maybe 45, sometimes a little older, sometimes even 50, 55, 60. But it doesn't matter. You know, 60 is a better time to do it than 80, right? Because if you're 60, you could still jump back. You still got a lot of good years in you at 60, and you could still earn a lot of money. I've heard a statistic. You probably know Dave Ramsey, who's the talk show host here in the U.S. who talks about paying off debt. He has cited many, many times that the top earnings decade for people is their 50s. The second highest earnings decade is your 60s. So in other words, let me phrase that differently. Most people say I earned the most money in my 50s. The next highest answer is I earned the most money in my 60s. So, you know, that just goes to show you that start early, start while you're working, start while you still have the ability to go out there and generate some income, because you're absolutely right. At 90, what are you going to do? Nothing, really.
Yeah. Yes. That's...
Maybe we'll be hosting podcasts at 90. I don't know, Anne. Maybe that sort of thing is possible. But, you know, I think at least for today's older generation, not so much.
Okay. So in a nutshell, what's your message to everyone and how do you help people?
Yeah, you know, we really encourage people to take a look at their overall financial wellness. And I think it's kind of, just to recap what we just said, really, and to summarize, take a hard look at what you have. Do it while you're working. It's very, very important that you realize you have to take this into your own hands, because as much as there may be some government social service programs around the world, you know, nonetheless, as you said, they can often provide a somewhat meager existence. Most of them never really were designed to support people in what might be considered a middle-class lifestyle in a developed nation. And you have to take care of yourself. We are living longer. We just are. And most people don't want to have to turn to their children and grandchildren for help. And this isn't this argument about, oh, you know, we've all got to be rugged individualists and only look out for ourselves. I'm not really saying that, because it is very important to be part of your community, be engaged. I mean, that's a very big part of healthiness, healthy lifestyle in retirement. And people who live longer, they're engaged with their community. They have friends. They're engaged with their family. Maybe they do volunteer work. You know, they have some kind of meaningful life well into retirement. So this is not about saying, you know, hunker down and build up the barricades and only take care of yourself. That's not what I'm saying here. But you really do have to be very proactive and take the right steps. Make sure you're working with somebody that has an obligation to be a fiduciary, which means they, like my company, we have the obligation to put our clients' interests first above our own. Not every advisor has that, believe it or not. You want to make sure your investments are low cost. That's a very good thing to do. And then jump into that planning process. You know, it can be a little intimidating. You might not always result in what you want to see, but isn't it better to know that? You know, even when we do a plan for a person or a couple who maybe the results are not quite what they want, they're always very happy to have seen it because that means they can start to correct course. Maybe it means you sell that home that's too big for the two of you and you're just rattling around in there. And you can sell that home and downsize and buy something smaller and invest the rest of the money for your retirement. So do it while there are still things you could do while you still have options.
Thank you. That's very good advice. And I can concur with you. My parents didn't move while they were fit and healthy. And when Dad passed away at 85, I think my mother found it very stressful to downsize and move on in her 80s.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I understand that. That's a good point. That's a good point. You don't. And see, I like this, that you've seen all of this personally. So you can actually very much understand how the sooner you can do this, the better.
That's right. So how do people get in touch with you? What's the best way to find you, Kate?
Yeah. So my email is Kate, K-A-T-E, at bettermoneydecisions.com. Kate at bettermoneydecisions.com. The website, of course, is bettermoneydecisions.com. We've actually just launched our content site, which is called betterfinancialdecisions.com. And once this interview runs, and we will post this on there as well. But that's a couple ways to get a hold of me. We have a Facebook page too. Better Money Decisions is also on Facebook. So I'm pretty easy to find.
Okay. Well, thanks very much. It's been fascinating and very informative. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Anne.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.